only to the international community, but specifically to the United States, a key supporter of Israel in the war on Gaza.
Israel ek fascist.
The whole world now understands that Israel is a fascist regime that has occupied Palestinian territories. Israel sheds the blood of Palestinians to continue its existence in the world. The Israeli policy of oppression has been defeated now. These worldwide protests indicate that the concept of peace has won and the narrative of oppressors has been defeated.
The convergence of the people from different backgrounds symbolized a shared commitment to the Palestinian cause, underscoring the gravity of the situation in the besieged Gaza Strip.
People around the world, including Pakistanis, are on the streets and condemning the U.S. and its illegitimate child Israel for their actions in Gaza. Due to increasing public resentment, the U.S. and Israel are under tremendous public pressure, and the real face of the Zionist regime has been exposed in the international community. No oppressor can resist this public pressure anymore.
The event not only highlighted the immediate concern for Gaza, but also exemplified the broader call for justice and peace in the region.
The Palestine issue is a matter of honor for the Muslim community now. The events of Karbala are being repeated in Gaza. They are killing men, women, and children, considering Palestinians to be alone. But Israel and the U.S. should not forget that they are not alone. The whole of humanity stands with the people of Palestine.
United in their demand for peace and justice, the participants of Palestine Freedom March fervently called for a lasting ceasefire in Gaza.
The ongoing protest rallies, boycott of pro-Israeli products, and systematic fundraising initiatives are the examples of how deeply the Pakistani society is committed to helping Palestinian people who are confronting Israeli aggression in Gaza. Nasik Azmi, Lahore.
A group of Italian journalists, representatives of media unions and organizations, gathered at the Roman Press Association in Rome to discuss how the ongoing conflict in the Gaza Strip has been biasedly covered by the media so far. The initiative was organized by the No Gag Network, a group that advocates for freedom of expression in Italy, as Palestinian and international journalists trapped in the coastal territory continue to be slaughtered by the Israeli occupation forces.
As of today, we don't know if these journalists have been executed or they have been killed in their homes together with their beloved ones during the Israeli bombardments. And I ask you, would that make any difference? It is horrific anyway.
During the meeting, journalists agreed that a war needs field reporting, condemning Israel's refusal to heed calls to allow independent reporters to access Gaza for direct testimony. Since October 9, the 2.3 million residents of Gaza have been experiencing a devastating near-complete communications blackout.
Killing a journalist is a war crime, and we call on the International Criminal Court to proceed with the examination into what's happening in Gaza.
The Italian journalists also relaunched a petition already signed by 200 French, Palestinian and Lebanese journalists demanding access to Gaza and the protection of journalists covering the Israeli onslaught on the Strip.
La libertà d'informazione viene seppellita sotto le macerie.
Freedom of expression has been buried under Gaza's rubble. Only journalists embedded with the IOF are in Gaza, operating under the observation of Israeli commanders in the field.
Speaking of freedom of expression, the future of journalism in Italy looks bleak. There has been a big question mark over the credibility of Italian media outlets in recent years, as the sharp divide between the mainstream media and a large chunk of public opinion has been growing deeper.
The divide is getting deeper and deeper. Much of the public opinion does not follow mainstream TVs and newspapers anymore. They have totally lost trust in them. And it is understandable. The media keeps saying the conflict in Gaza started on October 7.
Meanwhile, Italy's foreign minister Antonio Tajani has urged Israel to use the 4-day ceasefire in Gaza to carefully consider what the international perception is of its offensive against the Strip. Max Civili, Rome.
The freed Palestinian prisoners and their families here in the occupied territories were filled with mixed emotions as 39 released women and minors found relief from the brutality of Israeli jails as part of a prisoner exchange agreement with Hamas. 39 is not just a number, as each of the freed Palestinians has a different story to tell after languishing for months in Israeli jails where thousands of Palestinian freedom fighters are still being held.
Inshallah, all the prisoners will be released. We have faith in Allah and the resistance. We didn't have a radio or television to know what was going on outside the prisons. We knew about the ceasefire and the deal when Israeli jailers raided our cells and started to bring out prisoners. They grabbed us by our clothes and dragged us away from the cells.
The moment we knew that the resistance had detained Israelis, I called my mom on that day. And she told me that resistance fighters had detained Israelis and that they were shelling the settlements. All female inmates started to scream for joy. Then the soldiers broke into our cells and attacked and beat us. And since then, the majority of us had been held in solitary confinement and all of our belongings had been seized. We do not have enough food or water. And we were literally being mistreated. When we were informed that there was a swap deal, we were happy but sad at the same time because of the martyrs in Gaza. We are proud of Gaza and the resistance, and may God bless the martyrs.
13 Israeli captives were released by Hamas as part of the swap deal. Israel has agreed to release 150 Palestinian women and children prisoners in exchange for Hamas releasing 50 of the women and children taken captive during the Al-Aqsa Flood operation on the 7th of October. The prisoner exchange takes place during the 4-day truce in the Gaza Strip, and that's why this relief is mixed with sadness as Palestinians fear the resumption of Israeli hostilities in Gaza after the ceasefire expires. The swap deal, however, is not the end of the story, as families of other prisoners hope all their loved ones will be freed soon.
What Hamas did, she make it this time with force. Even we lost a lot of blood. My people, I passed away. They killed hospitals, they killed people, they killed everywhere. But we still believe that this is our right and we'll take our freedom, whatever will happen. We will give this and we will give more years. Kamal Nail for him is 44 years in prison. His age now is 66. And we have Kamal Suher Burkhouti, she's in prison too, which is her age 64. We believe this is the first step. And inshallah, we hope with the people, with their strongest, which they are, we will have the next step, which is liberate of all Palestine.
Before October 7, there were about 5,200 Palestinians in Israeli jails. However, in the last few weeks, the number of Palestinian inmates skyrocketed as another 3,000 were detained. The release of those Palestinian prisoners from Israeli jails gives a glimmer of hope for thousands of detainees and their families that the resistance will keep its promise to release all prisoners. Mona Qandil, Occupied Ramallah.
A peaceful march for peace. As the bombs temporarily stop falling from the sky above Gaza, hundreds of thousands of pro-Palestine demonstrators of all faiths are back to the streets of the British capital, many traveling from other parts of the UK, united in their demands.
We need to cease fire, we need to end the siege in Gaza, we need to end the occupation and free Palestine.
A long-term solution is an immediate ceasefire, longer-term ceasefire. It is an end to the system of apartheid. It is an end to the occupation. It is an end to the oppression and systematic oppression that has been going on for the last 75 years.
Demands is obviously that Israel stops this genocide, that they allow the people to go back to their homes in Gaza, that they stop pushing them out towards the deserts. And
more than 1,500 police officers were on duty, distributing leaflets warning demonstrators against the use of, quote, racist abuse and promoting terrorism, raising questions about proportionality.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure on the police being put on them by the government to put a stamp down on these protests. You know, these protests are accused of being anti-Semitic, but really, these are just ordinary workers who can understand what's happening, who can see through the establishment lies, the propaganda.
What they're also demanding is that the UK government stop arming the Israeli regime and withdraw its diplomatic cover for it.
Western governments have suffered major reputational damage for their continued support for the Israeli regime's crimes against Palestinians. And the people here are highlighting Western double standards with regard to the protection of civilians in different conflicts.
Well, we see it all over. When it was the Ukrainian issue, you know, the flags were out, everyone's talking about it. Right now, it's silence across every political spectrum. Labour, nothing. Conservative, nothing. You know, and their parties that we're not going to be voting for. So, yes, we need to basically, you know, this has to be the forefront of all political activity.
The four-day truce offers some hope to these demonstrators that it might mean the beginning of the end and a breath of fresh air to more than 2 million Gazans left with few options for survival. This is the seventh protest of the kind in as many weeks, and the organizers say as long as the killing continues, so will they. Saipur is up, London.
Palestine will be free has become a popular slogan at demonstrations around the world. In Seoul on Saturday, the 10th protest here against Israel's attack on Gaza, a young teacher outlined the scope of Israeli mass murder of young Palestinians.
More than 6,000 Palestinian children have lost their lives in unimaginably horrific ways, and even newborn babies were killed. Our children, who should be happy at school, learning to read, learn numbers, sing and draw, and hang out with their friends, terrorists?
Hani Mansour has attended several of the rallies and marches in support of Palestinians. He argues that Palestinians are justified in defending and fighting for their homeland, and it is the U.S. hegemonic self-interest that's behind Washington's support of the illegal Israeli occupation.
America wants to dominate the world, and when Israel was established, it wanted dominance over the entire Middle East. So if people are exploited and regions are exploited, America is not harmed at all, but is the first beneficiary of everything that happens in the world.
While genocide is more and more often applied to Israel's seemingly indiscriminate attacks on Gaza, a linguistic debate is raging, putting the slaughter of thousands of people into context. Around the world, Israel appears to be losing that debate amid growing demands for a lasting truce. The ongoing release of detainees on both sides may represent some degree of optimism. Still, Israel maintains it will continue its war on Gaza. But demonstrations like this one are driving home the fact that the broader issue of Israel's occupation of Palestinian lands will eventually need to be resolved. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Another pro-Palestinian demonstration has taken place in the Yemeni capital Sana'a in solidarity with Palestinians and their resilience in the face of the Israeli aggression. Protesters also expressed support for the Yemeni government's decision to continue targeting Israel with drones and ballistic missiles. They stressed that this is a battle between good versus evil.
This is a battle against the heads and masterminds of disbelief, at the head of which is America and Israel, the great Satan and the cancer in the body of the Muslim world. By the will of Allah, victory is near.
14 nations wages airstrikes against us and all fail to deter us as we continue to fight today. We do not fear them as long as Allah is with us. We tell them that no matter how much you plot, Allah will turn their plots against them.
Last week, the Yemeni army confirmed they are able to target Israeli ships in the Red Sea and any other location. The army also stated they will target Israeli ships heading toward occupied Palestine or any other country. The Ansarullah military says its moves against Israel are part of efforts to pressure the regime in Tel Aviv to put a halt to the atrocities against Palestinians.
Yemen's armed forces will not hesitate to target all Israeli ships in the Red Sea or at any location within our reach. Yemen's armed forces will not stop launching attacks against Israelis until the regime's aggression on our Palestinian brothers ends.
The government in Sana'a believes these military moves could lead to a full-scale war with the U.S. and the Israeli regime. Despite that, Yemen leaders believe war has been permitted against those killing Muslims and forcing them out of their land.
Israel's economy is heavily dependent on imports and exports traded through Yemen's crucial Bab al-Mandab Strait. This comes as the Ansarullah movement has announced it will not allow any Israeli shipments to pass through this strait as long as the Tel Aviv regime continues its acts of aggression in occupied Palestine. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
In the limelight.
If the BRICS countries can unite around the Palestinian cause and punish the Zionist regime in any serious way, this would lay the foundation for long-term change, which would highlight the growing irrelevance of the UNSC as a political body capable of making life-saving choices. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media website Sun News agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, on Tuesday, November 21st, the BRICS Economic Bloc convened an emergency virtual summit to address the ongoing Israeli aggression on Gaza. Notably, the summit was held at the request of the Islamic Republic of Iran, in which President Ebrahim Raisi raised several demands and suggestions. The BRICS Economic Alliance accounts for a large chunk of global GDP and is committed to representing the global majority through its induction of six new countries in August of this year, including Iran, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Egypt, Ethiopia, and Argentina. Though it does not have the same diplomatic clout on the world stage as the United Nations, the countries part of the alliance have enough economic and diplomatic soft power to force significant changes on their own. President Raisi has been quick to recognize this power. The demands raised by the Islamic Republic of Iran at the summit are in line with its calls since the beginning of the Zionist regime's onslaught on Gaza, which has now killed at least 15,000 and displaced thousands more. This brutal aggression has been exacerbated by the United States, which is the primary culprit in the oppression of Palestinians, using the Tel Aviv regime only as a tool of executive power. President Raisi has highlighted for some time that the United Nations Security Council, of which the United States is a permanent member, has failed to act to save the lives of Palestinians. The United States has sabotaged every effort in the past 7 weeks to demand an end to the aggression on Gaza, citing its commitment to the defense of the occupying regime. The four-day truce announced recently and confirmed by both the Israeli regime and the Palestinian resistance group Hamas came despite efforts by the U.S. to keep the pot boiling. In its statement, Hamas made it clear that its hands remain on the trigger if the Zionist regime breaches the truce deal because they know what the regime is capable of. It has brazenly violated over 60 UN resolutions over the years and simply cannot be trusted to honor any resolution or deal. Furthermore, the resolutions adopted by the UNSC do not call for a sustainable solution to the Palestinian question. It only kicks the can down the road as hundreds to thousands of Palestinians continue to be martyred at the hands of the Zionist occupation year after year. If the UNSC can't resolve it, perhaps it's time to rethink things and try a new approach. That's where the BRICS bloc comes into play. Though no formal declaration or commitment has been made, the countries have now for the first time been put to the test on how they can navigate a critical situation like the Zionist aggression on Gaza without the United States in the room. Most UNSC resolutions are heavily influenced or created by the United States. This often results in bitter political stalemates or half-measure solutions that do not solve anything. Several key demands were raised by President Raisi at the BRICS summit recently. There are demands to stop the aggression on Gaza, lift the blockade, and allow humanitarian aid, not just for 4 days. This is typically a demand even echoed by some representatives within the United States itself, despite the Biden administration refusing to allow it. Iran insists on a few more finishing touches that can solve the problem in its entirety. Citing the destruction of doctors, journalists, women and children, as well as the usage of banned chemical weapons like white phosphorus, President Raisi took this opportunity to demand that Israel be designated a terrorist state and supported the idea of BRICS countries uniting to demand that the International Criminal Court pursue charges against Israel, and added in the United States for its direct hand in the aggression on Gaza. He also called for severing economic ties with the Zionist regime, which is in line with his demands to oil-rich countries to cut off all oil and energy to the Zionist regime. Most of what the Iranian president said in his speech is what the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has also repeatedly stated in his speeches in recent weeks. President Raisi asserted continuing interactions with the fake Israeli regime, especially in the military and economic fields, means helping to continue the crimes and killing of women and children, which is condemned and blamed by all nations. He highlighted not only the U.S. role in political support for the Zionist terror in Gaza, but also questioned the validity of the UNSC itself. The US, France, and the UK, all of whom are permanent members of the UNSC, freely sell weapons to the Zionist occupation. Three countries that profit off the brutal massacre of Palestinians cannot be trusted to draft resolutions for truly advocating for the livelihoods of Palestinians. President Raisi said, How cruel is it that America, Britain, Germany and France, as Western powers, send all kinds of weapons and bombs to Israel on a daily basis and at the same time oppose the ceasefire? America, along with Israel, has closed all ways to help the people of Gaza and paralyzed the UN Security Council. Parrying the demands for aid and charges of terrorism against Israel, President Raisi suggested that the BRICS nations should rally around the Palestinians' rights to self-defense, which is an internationally recognized law that the occupied can resist the occupier by any means necessary. This contrasts the environment in the UNSC, where the U.S. has blocked Russian ceasefire resolution because it did not condemn Hamas. Recognizing the Palestinian right to self-defense against a brutal occupation is an important and just demand, but may be the primary point of disagreement between the various heads of state. The Islamic Republic, however, does not recognize the Zionist occupation, correctly referring to it as a fake and illegitimate entity. So, the bar has been set for BRICS' first political test, and it has been set by the Islamic Republic. Though BRICS countries do not see completely eye to eye, and may often not be on the same page at all. For example, India enjoys warm relations with Israel, even though it is rather new. This will be an opportunity to see how they navigate a humanitarian crisis as an economic bloc without the political stonewalling from Washington. Even if maximalist demands are not met, the BRICS countries have a chance to now show the world that they really are building to represent the global majority, as stated by Russian President Vladimir Putin.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to the Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Thanks so much for being with us. 4 days of a ceasefire have passed and a two-day extension has been announced. This after 48 days of an Israeli genocide on Palestinians in Gaza. Hamas and the Israeli regime have agreed to release more hostages, and Hamas has announced that it is willing to release all of the captives if Israel releases all of its Palestinian hostages, which
Of course, Israel calls prisoners. There are up to 10,000 Palestinian prisoners or hostages currently being held in Israeli prisons. This is the reality for Palestinians living under an occupying force. Whether we look at Gaza or the occupied territories, the regime tries to create hell for the native Palestinian population. Is there any choice besides resistance? I'd like to welcome my guests to the spotlight. Joyce Samudli, research fellow, Global Policy Institute, London Metropolitan University of Budapest. Hartley Schlanger, spokesman of LaRouche organization out of Germany. Thank you both for being with me. I'll start it off with George. Now, the ceasefire has been extended for 2 days. I want to start here. I want to get your opinion about the fact that there is even a discussion about if and when this genocide will continue. I mean, how can there even be a debate? Why isn't Israel just told it's over, no more, it won't be allowed?
Well, ideally, that's what should happen. There's only one power in the world that can do that, that has any influence and sway over Israel, and that, of course, is the United States. The United States is not willing to do that, but the United States is willing to exert some pressure as a face-saving exercise, because ultimately this is a huge embarrassment for the United States. There is revulsion throughout the world about what Israel is doing, and revulsion particularly among America's European allies. So given that this and the anger that is being directed at Israel is being now directed at the United States as Israel's enabler, the Biden administration has to do something. It has to come up with a formula, a face-saving formula, whereby it can be seen to be on the side of the good guys, on the side of the victims, the innocents, while at the same time enabling Israel. So it's a very delicate and, of course, a dishonest fine line that the United States is drawing, but that's the situation. So these kind of extensions of the ceasefire, they are being facilitated and enabled by the United States.
Well, Harley, I mean, looking at this onslaught that took place, this genocide that took place in Gaza, what did Israel get out of it? What has it accomplished?
Well, first of all, I have to realize that Netanyahu has a commitment beyond getting back the hostages. Netanyahu's commitment is the ethnic cleansing of Gaza. Netanyahu is a greater Israel fanatic, and his intention is not to stop and to allow these pauses because he's under enormous pressure internationally and even within Israel. But he said, and he's made clear, he's going to intend to continue the war as soon as the ceasefire or the temporary truce ends. He said the other day, when he was asked about this kind of image of Israel, he said, "History does not favor Jesus Christ over Genghis Khan. History favors the strong." So his view is that he's going to be strong, he's going to carry this out. Now, what your other guest said is absolutely true. The U.S. could stop this. I just wrote an article about how Eisenhower intervened in 1956 in the Suez Crisis when Israel, England, and France invaded Egypt. And Eisenhower threatened to use the economic power of the United States against the British, threatening to dump the U.S. holdings of pound sterling bonds if the British didn't end this invasion. And within 24 hours, the Brits, the French, and the Israelis pulled back. So the U.S. does have the power. The question is, how do you overcome the insanity in the U.S. Congress, which is largely controlled by the military-industrial complex, which wants more wars? And we have to have a bigger mobilization in the United States to put pressure on the Congress and on Biden.
Okay, well, George, do you think that the Israelis have discredited themselves in so many ways? I mean, if we look at, from a military perspective, we're talking about the fourth powerful, most powerful military in the world, allegedly, and this regime
has been up against resistance force, which has no air force, it has no navy, no sophisticated weapons. Yes, Israel has inflicted a lot of pain on the civilians, but that doesn't take much military expertise to drop these bombs on civilians. But from that military perspective, why have they really not been effective?
Well, probably because Israel isn't militarily particularly effective, and its intelligence services are not particularly effective. The Israeli myth has been assiduously cultivated by, obviously, the Israeli government, the Israeli propaganda machine, and the Israel lobby in the United States. And so they've been basking in this glory of what happened in 1967, which is now almost 60 years ago. But ever since 1967, none of Israel's military ventures have been particularly successful. They've gone from one fiasco after another. You know, there are several wars in Lebanon. Then, of course, you had several wars in Gaza. And they never come to any successful conclusion. And, of course, we know about their intelligence failures, their vaunted Mossad, which supposedly can get any terrorist anywhere. They almost always miss. They almost always kill innocents and claim, well, we've got the PLO terrorists. They never do it. So Israel just isn't that powerful. What Israel is very good at doing is at propaganda. I mean, he's very, very good at controlling the narrative. It's very good at controlling the political debate in the United States. I mean, it takes some doing. When you look at the polls, some 70% of Americans want a ceasefire, and about 5% of Congress wants a ceasefire. Now, that takes some doing, and that, you have to say, no one other than Israel can pull something like that off.
Right. Well, what about that, Hartley? Let's talk about that narrative that George said, because Israel's forte has been Hasbara, controlling that narrative. But it does seem that in this, during this genocide, we have seen massive demonstrations across the world and unbelievable amounts sharing information as if people, and many of them were, it was the first time that they had heard about the roots of the Israeli regime, what this is all about, that Palestine is occupied. Your take on this part of it and how significant is it?
Well, I'm living in Germany now, and I see how they're playing this in Germany, that Israel was the victims of the Nazis and it can never happen, be allowed to happen again. And therefore, Germany should be providing weapons for Israel along with the United States. This is the narrative of victimology. But if you look at the actual situation in Palestine, you see who the victims have been, the Palestinian civilian population and the ability to function as a national entity. The Israelis won't allow it. Now, in the United States, most of the major media is controlled by a group of five companies, basically a cartel, which is very much influenced by the money coming in from American Zionists. Although I will say that there is beginning to be a little bit of a shift in that. Even the Washington Post and a couple of other pro-war publications have had to report that Israel did not prove the case that there were tunnels in a command center under the Al-Shifa hospital. Even that's beginning to crack. Look, there have been large demonstrations. There were 10 to 20,000 people marching in Berlin on Saturday. I think the key is that fighting to get the true story out of what happened after 1967, after the UN Resolution 242, and effort after effort for resolving the situation has been sabotaged by Israel, which of course says that it's the Palestinians who have sabotaged it.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines.
featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
George, in your perspective, I want to look at your idea of globally. We're talking more about governments and even a lot of the people, how Israel was looked at prior to October the 7th and since that time. What has changed?
Well, of course, there has been a global consensus pretty much since 1967 as to the outline of a lasting Middle East settlement, which is the two-state solution. And the Palestinian state would constitute the West Bank and Gaza, which was only 20% of the historic Palestine, the British-mandated Palestine. So it would be a very substantial concession on the part of the Palestinians. But nonetheless, that was the global consensus. That was shared by the Soviet Union, that was shared by most of Europe, and of course Asia and Africa. The United States has supposedly gone along with this. You know, it has supported Resolution 242 in public, but in actual fact, it has basically turned a blind eye and has generally supported Israel's undermining of Resolution 242, which began immediately after the end of the Six-Day War with the building of the settlements. It just went on and on and on, 56 years of settlement building. The United States could have put an end to it at any time. It chose not to. So that was the view before October the 7th. What October the 7th has shown is such savagery on the part of Israel. I mean, if one looks at the casualties, let's say 14,000 dead in Gaza, and we know it's at least 40% children. So if we assume that of the rest of the, so if they're children, that means they're innocent by definition. You know, they had nothing to do with October the 7th. Then if you look at the remaining 60%, if you say that of that number, 50% are Hamas fighters, I don't think it's anything like that, but nonetheless, let's just assume that's the case. That means 70% of the deaths that Israel has committed are civilians, are innocents. 70% are innocents. That is a staggering number, and I think that has really shaken the public opinion in countries, I mean, certainly even in the United States, but definitely in Europe. That, of course, is different as to the governments. The governments are a different matter because the governments like to keep in with the Americans. They, you know, that's another issue. But that, you know, but as far as the public opinion is goes, that has been very, very impactful.
Mm-hmm. Well, Harley, when we look at this situation with, of course, this genocide on the one hand taking place in Gaza, the regime also had to handle the southern border. Well, its northern border, dealing with Hezbollah, and then, of course, the southern border dealing with Hamas and the situation. I mean, this is something that the regime hadn't faced in this way before. What type of role do you think that having a double front played in adding frustration to the regime?
Well, I think you also have to consider the West Bank, where we see settlers running wild, attacking innocent Palestinian civilians there. But I think, look, if the U.S. sent the fleet, the large fleet, the two aircraft carrier strike groups and other ships, with the idea that this was to deter Iran, it makes no sense. The U.S. show of force is not going to stop Hezbollah or Hamas, because, in fact, the ships may become sitting ducks for Hezbollah if they decided to fight them. So what we're facing is the danger of an expanded war, which comes largely from Israel and from the United States foolishly saying we'll support Israel to the end. In a sense, the same thing Biden says about supporting Ukraine to the end. The Americans are discredited internationally. Look at the Global South. Look at the United Nations General Assembly. 120 nations voted for a ceasefire and only 14 against it. So we're looking at an overwhelming part of the world which has chosen to defend the rights of the Palestinians over the greed of the Israelis to grab all the land. So the only question that really remains, and by the way, Netanyahu may extend a truce a couple of days, but he's not going to stop his bloodthirsty attack on the Palestinians. That does have to come from the outside, and it's going to have to come from the United States. In the short term, it's not going to happen because of the Congress. But in the longer term, Biden's up for re-election. He's facing a catastrophe in Ukraine and a public relations catastrophe with the Israel-Gaza situation. So there is a chance that this can be turned around, but it's going to depend on the American people showing a little bit of gut and grit and going out and learning what the real story is in Palestine, and taking that into the street and against the war hawks in Washington.
Well, George, how has this genocide not only revealed the truth of the Israeli regime for those who didn't know, but also the whole Western hegemonic front, that silence for so long, not only silence, we saw Western leaders going to Israel and giving their support, their thumbs up to Netanyahu in the middle of the genocide.
No, it's quite remarkable. Biden, who notoriously didn't go to East Palestine after the train derailment, and which was a huge environmental catastrophe, he just didn't even bother to go visit. There was a horrific fire in Hawaii. He didn't go, couldn't be bothered to interrupt his holiday to go. I mean, finally, after several weeks, he decided to show up for a few hours. Yet when he came to Israel, he just rushed off and, gave a bear hug to Netanyahu. And he's now given, I don't know how many addresses to the American people on the subject of Israel. Again, he seems to be taking the plight of Israel and, what Israel is enduring as far more important for him than what Americans are enduring. And that, it's a reflection of America's political elite. Now, in the case of Europe, Europe is now so totally subordinate to the United States. I mean, they're now essentially just the vassals of the Americans. The European Union is just simply an appendage of NATO. So whatever their personal feelings may be, and Emmanuel Macron, the French president, has blurted out in a number of interviews how disgusted he is by what Israel is doing. Nonetheless, publicly, he follows the Americans. The German case is very interesting. I mean, they're, as my colleague pointed out, they're saying, because we have a special responsibility toward Israel because of the Holocaust. Well, you can argue it the other way, which is that the Palestinians have had to suffer as a result of what the Germans did. I mean, it was,
mind-boggling when we look at this. Okay, so, all right, it started, well, we can say it started with the British or whatever, but with the Germans doing what they did, so the Palestinians have had to pay the price. And then we see the way Germany has stood steadfast with the Israeli regime against the Palestinians. It is absolutely mind-boggling. And while we are in Germany, let me cross back over to Harley. I mean, Harley, the Germans are just a whole different case. I mean, it is quite mind-boggling to see the reaction coming out of Germany to all of this, when basically the Palestinians had nothing to do with this to begin with, but they're the ones suffering.
Well, there's been a real brainwashing done on the German people around the Nazi period. The idea that all Germans are guilty and therefore Germany must never assert itself as a national sovereign nation. But just in the last days, the German Council on Foreign Relations has called for a massive increase in military production in Germany, a massive increase in the numbers of people in the Bundeswehr, the German army, and a change in the mentality of the German people to become, quote, war ready, unquote.
Hmm.
Now, as our colleague just said, what's mind-boggling about this is that Germany's not threatened by anyone. A realistic assessment of the situation, if they had it, the Germans would be very responsive to what's happening to the Palestinians, and many of them are upset about it. But they're terrified by the reaction from the United States, and so they're continuing to send weapons into Ukraine. And by the way, you talk about ironies. The Germans are supporting a government in Ukraine which has Nazis in its defense and security positions.
Yeah, there's just a lot of things going on with Germany. I mean, you guys couldn't even protect yourself with the Nord Stream. It's
exactly.
Mind-boggling.
Didn't even raise a peep about Nord Stream,
yeah.
Which was terrorism conducted by the United States against an ally.
So now, what's key now? Because we only have like a minute left. And going back to the subject at hand, when we see the Europeans, the way they're reacting, we see the whole Western hegemonic front and the way they're acting. What needs to happen, not only to have a permanent ceasefire, but really to end this siege and to end the occupation?
Well, the only thing that could make a difference is a change in attitude on the part of Washington. We haven't seen any evidence of this, but, you know, Biden knows that much of his base, his kind of leftish progressive base is very unhappy about this. He's doing terribly in the polls. He's facing a very difficult re-election next year. He can't afford to have anyone staying home, sitting on their hands, and this might have some effect. I think it is having some effect on Biden, in putting pressure on Israel just to bring this thing to an end. Because the longer it goes on, the more difficult it's going to be for me, because Biden and the Americans are being blamed for this with very good justification. So I think that's, in the short term, that's one thing that could change if the Americans really start putting pressure on Netanyahu, knock it off. Remember, Ronald Reagan did this with Menachem Begin during the 1982 invasion of Lebanon. There was a point at which Reagan said, enough is enough. He got on the phone to Begin and said, knock it off. And Begin knocked it off. There haven't been too many presidents since then who have been ready to do that with Israel.
Okay. All right. And on that note, thank you both for being with me. George Samoulier, Research Fellow, Global Policy Institute, London Metropolitan University, Budapest. Harley Schlanger, spokesman of the LaRouche Organization, Potsdam, Germany. And thank you for being with us for another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Hope to see you right here next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.